tragic accident changed the course of his life forever. For most, it would have begun a life of discontent and wallowing around in self-misery. For Jonathan Nadeau, it kickstarted a new chapter of inspiration and appreciation. Even though he lost his sight permanently, he gained a passion to put creativity first in all areas of his life. And now, he wants to encourage you to do the same. There are times when you'll be faced with a choice. Be crushed by the weight of the situation, or use the fresh start to rebound bigger, better, and more inspired than ever before. This is Tornado, stories of those who refuse to choose defeat and instead chose to embrace the storm. Here's your host, Jonathan Nadeau.
Greetings and salutations. Thank you for joining us on Embrace Your Storm. I'm Jonathan Nadeau here with you as always. And this time we have two guests on for this film. It's called When You Are Gone, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank God. All right. When You Are Gone. And I have on Raphael and Andrew. Raphael, were you the director or producer or both?
Both.
Both. There we go. And Andrew's on. And he was James Taylor in the movie, correct, Andrew?
That's correct. Yep.
Perfect. Awesome. So I don't know who wants to go first, but I guess we'll go with Andrew because you went last here. So Andrew, how did you, before we get to the film and your part in it, how did you even get involved in kind of the film industry? Like, what brought you to wanting to act and be in this crazy world?
Actually it was my mom.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. It's like the opposite of most like actors' story. You know how the parents were like, please do anything but acting?
Yeah, seriously.
I was in high school I was like senior year at the point where it's like, you know, what do you want to do next? Do you want to go to college or do you want to like, I was thinking about the military, to be honest. So I was kind of thinking, I had like a group of friends, we were all kind of going that direction. Like a few of them had already signed up, but I was kind of holding off. Because I just wasn't 100% yet. You know, I was that's a real big commitment. And like, you know, what does it really entail? You know, where is it going to take me and things like that? And my mom was strongly like against that. Please don't join the military.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Kind of desperately searching for something to like, you know, point me in another direction. And I used to make like these little videos I used to do plays when I was a kid. So when I was super young, I did plays and of course I had fun and I loved it, but you know, and it was just like a fun activity, you know, like you're a kid, yeah. You play soccer, you play, you know, you try like different things out. So that's really all it ever was for me. Like by the time I got to high school, I stopped. I wasn't doing any acting, but I would make some videos with my buddies. We had, man, this is a throwback. I don't know if either of you remember, there was a camera called the Flip.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember
that?
Flip cameras?
Oh yeah.
They were that little tiny box, but the cool part about them was they had like a USB inside of them. So you could just record and then just plug the camera like straight in to a computer. So I had one of those, right? I just like get together. One day, me and a friend were super bored and we came up with this skit about if we were just these two cops who like didn't go to the academy. We knew nothing about police work. And, you know, we were just these terrible, you know, stupid cops who couldn't solve anything. And we just filmed it and posted it. Like, yeah, we did it on YouTube, I think. And
oh, that's funny.
A bunch of people liked it. And they were like, that's hilarious. You guys should do more. So we started this little series called Dumb Cops. And it was just for fun, you know, it was just fun. I never even thought of it as acting really, because we never wrote scripts or anything. We just kind of come up with like a concept of like, you know, okay, like what if, you know, we're chasing a bank robber and you know, it was all improv dialogue,
but we kind of had
like a vent of like, you know, we'd get to a point where we got him, he'd get away somehow. Or, you know, once in a while we'd come up with like an ending because we started to get more and more into it, you know, like as the episodes, if you will, went on, we got so much more elaborate. Like they ended up becoming like, they started out, the first video was like 5 minutes and like we did a season finale that we broke into two. They were like 20 minutes a piece. but it was all for fun. And she brought that up. that was long story, but that's how we got there. She brought that up, you know, and she was like, you know, you love doing that. Why not take like an acting class? So I agreed. I said for the summer. So that's summer of after high school. I was like, I'll take an acting class and see what happens. And, you know, if I don't dig it, I'm joining the military. And she said, okay, fine. And well, I loved it.
I
found a class in Plymouth, Minnesota, where I was just, it was like a commercial acting class. And I met like really cool people and like, I had a ton of fun with it. And it ended up leading me to a like model acting competition in Los Angeles in 2014. And that was that was the first time I ever came to LA. And once I came here, I was just like, you know, coming from a really small town in Minnesota to this massive city here, and just the difference of like, it was so vibrant and there's so much happening here. Yeah. I just kind of fell in love with it like immediately. And I was like, man, okay, if I really want to try acting, I need to come here. It was like my only thought. I was like, I need to find a way to come and like move to LA. So I went back and, you know, there was like a somewhat of an industry in Minneapolis is our big city. So I was like, well, you know, I can try to like get started here, you know, see what I can find. And, you know, the agency's there. They're never like exclusive. So it's like you can have more than one. And there's only a handful. There's like five maybe in all of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And they're super easy to sign with. Like you just kind of have to like find out about them and like set up an appointment, and then it's like, cool, we'll sign you. So, and that's exactly what happened. I ended up doing that, and I ended up with three agencies at the age of 18 with no like prior experience, which is crazy because here in LA, it's like that could never happen.
Right.
Spend so much time trying to get an agent here. But you know, there wasn't too much narrative work happening. You know, it was a lot of print, it was a lot of commercial, but nonetheless, you're still like on set. And you're still, you get the, you know, how it works. And I remember I booked like a featured background on a feature film that was there. And I was like getting escorted by the AD. And I didn't even know what an AD was. You know, I was just like, so what do you do?
And yeah, right, like, yeah.
AD. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So like, are you on every day? I just started to have like so much fun with it. And I went back for like a year doing that there in Minneapolis, saving up money. I had a part-time job at a casino hotel, and it was like a tip position. So I was like just saving a lot, saving. And then I ended up through that same competition, a school, which actually Rafa went to the same school, just a different location. It's called the New York Film Academy.
Oh, no kidding. That's funny.
Yeah.
Like they went to the same school.
Yeah. We found that out. When, man, do you remember when that was, Rafa? Like,
I think we found that out when we did that Zoom call. Remember when I offered you the lead wanted to meet?
Yeah. That's right. So he had done it way before me. When did you go, Rafa? Like 2010?
I went from 2007 to 2009. Yeah. And then I stayed in New York for like another year and a half.
Yeah. So I went a lot later than he did. I went in 2015.
That's still funny though. You both went to the, you know, same school or whatever.
Yeah, it's super cool. I'm just waiting for the day when they're going to find out about this thing. And then all of a sudden they're going to be like, come do an interview Q&A for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but anyways, they saw me at that competition I did. They offered me a scholarship. I kind of found it as like, this is my way to get to LA, is if I take them up on that offer, I have the money what I saved up and go to school there. That's what I ended up doing. I did the associate program, which was like a two year program, of all acting, all on camera. There was when I really was like, okay, this is kind of what it entails, you know. This is to be a film actor, you know, to be like, to do theater is like a different thing, you know. To do film,
I get
its own animal. And that's where I learned about it. And what was really cool about there, that I'm sure Rafa will agree with, is they teach you both sides. So it's not just, you know, if you go to study acting, they're still going to teach you about the filmmaking. And that's super important as an actor, because, you know, the whole film process is a collaboration. So the more that I know about what the crew does, the more I can help them with my performance and like, you know, how I, you know, cheat my body and like, you know, things like that, that like maybe you're not going to think about if you never studied what they're doing, you know, and you're just kind of like standing like, where should I go? Like what? And, you know, it just helps the entire end result be the best that it can be is when everybody is like really on the same page.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Raphael, how did you get involved? Like, so you ended up at that school earlier, but like what got you into this whole film world and industry? Like, was it writing or directing, producing? Like what got you?
I was actually always, you know, into film as a kid. Like it was my greatest hobby was just watching movies. And then I always kind of figured that I wanted to be involved in them somehow. When I was younger, I considered acting at first. And then one day I used to have a handy cam, you know, this was way before the, you did that a few years later than I did. So I had those handy cams that, you know, like record on a little cassette. I remember I put in my letter to Santa for like a good 7 years until my parents could finally afford to give it to me. And I just started making like stop motion animation shorts with like my action figures and like Play-Doh and anything I could get my hands on. And then one day I took the camera to school, to high school. I don't remember exactly why. And one of our teachers didn't show up. So we had like a free period. And then some of my classmates got kicked out of another class for making a mess. And we just shot like this little comedic skit, you know, just for the fun of it, because we had nothing better. And I edited it like a trailer. And then, you know, I took it to school the next day and I showed it to everybody. Everybody's like, oh, that looks great. Like, when does the movie come out? And so I turned to my friends and I'm like, hey, guys, how about we get together every weekend, you know, shoot some scenes and like make a movie just for the fun of it. And they're like, oh, yeah, let's do it. So we started getting together like every weekend. We ended up, the movie was like an hour and a half, I think. Like we ended up shooting a lot of footage over time. And, you know, we're just doing it for fun. It was just, it was like Rocky for teenagers, just like funny skits. And I remember when I was there at the time, I wanted to study computer animation for video games because I'd fallen in love with the cinematics in video games, you know, the cutscenes.
Because
they were like film, but without any limitations. Like you could put the camera anywhere. You could move it anywhere. You could have anything literally happen. And I just, you know, I wanted that freedom. And then when I was there, like directing my buddies on this whole skit thing, I was like, you know what? I think I like this. I think I could do this. I think I could direct. So straight out of high school, actually, I went to New York Film Academy in New York.
Wow.
This was back in 2007. And I was there from 2007 to 2009. I did the Master in Fine Arts program. And then after that, I applied for like a 1 year work visa. I was there working for a good year. I was very happy. I would have stayed in the US if it was a possibility, but you know, immigration is kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I ended up coming back to Mexico to get further studies. I did a bachelor's degree here in audiovisual production, which is, you know, kind of the same idea. And then I kind of just settled here. Like my plan was always to go back to the US, but you know, life is like, it doesn't always go exactly the way you want it. So I made the best of my situation and I started a small rental company business here. And I've been going at it for the last 7 years here in Guadalajara.
Nice. So then what brought you to making this film then? And there's, I doubt this was your first film you worked on, but how did you get to making this one?
Well, I always wanted to make a thriller, to be honest. It was the filmmakers that I always admired and the movies that I always liked to watch, you know, when I was growing up, were thrillers that really kept you on the edge of your seat. Like I remember watching The Usual Suspects when I was like 10, I think. And, you know, at the time it blew my mind. And like, you know, I've seen it again and I still love it. It's a fantastic movie. But I was like, man, there was, you know, there were such good hints about, you know, what the end was going to be, that if I would have just paid attention, you know, I could have seen the end coming. And I love that factor about it. And that factor about a lot of psychological thrillers, that you watch it and you get the whole experience and then you enjoy it. And then when you go watch it again, now that you know the ending, you start noticing like all the subtle hints at to the ending.
Yeah.
And I just, I love that experience so much that I wanted to give it to somebody else. And I wanted to be able to transmit that experience that had been transmitted to me. So I decided to make When You're Gone as my first feature. The idea actually came up during a homework assignment in university, actually. But I wrote the script back in 2015, and it was actually quite a while, you know, till I actually managed to be able to lift it up and do it, because we shot in 2020. And I remember I used to joke to Andrew about this, like, you know, could you imagine if I'd done it in 2015 and you would have been like a 17-year-old kid? Like, you
know, I would have been a baby.
Like, you know, it just wouldn't have been the same film without him. So I'm actually very glad that, because of how I postponed it for those 5 years, and that he was able to play the lead.
It's kind of funny how life works itself out like that, right? Like, can you give like a synopsis of the film, just so that the listeners get an idea of what it's about?
Yeah. When You're Gone is a psychological thriller that tells the story of James Taylor. James Taylor is a talented architect. He's very good at his job. He's successful. He has a beautiful wife that he really loves. They have a great relationship. And he's like very close to achieving, you know, the economic success that he's always wanted, because he's going to become partner at the firm that he works at. And that's like his dream, right? And he decides to go out with his wife to celebrate, you know, when he finds out that he's going to get the promotion. And unfortunately, they get attacked on the way out of the restaurant and she gets kidnapped. He follows, you know, all the instructions of the kidnappers. He pays the ransom and everything. And the kidnappers still execute her regardless. And he gets to witness it via live webcast. Man. So it's a very traumatizing experience. The movie goes forward quite a few years. The audience never knows exactly how many, but we start seeing that he's settled into a completely antisocial life. He's just dedicated purely to work, no interpersonal relationships of any kind. But we can see that he's a tormented character. He's very paranoid. He has delusions that he's being blackmailed. And he keeps facing these apparitions of his late wife, you know, in the form of a ghost. And the movie is just driving you from question to question. You're always trying to figure out what's in his head, what's really happening. You know, is there somebody behind this? Where is this all going? And it just kind of keeps you like that up until the very end.
Man. So, Andrew, what is it? What was it about the part, you know, when you read the script, you're like, dude, I need to do this. Like, what did you like about it?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. You know what, in that synopsis, you get a pretty clear idea of what James goes through. And it's like, it's devastation and it's torment. And it's like trying to put on that happy face that we all do in real life. So he was just super deep and rich character that was already kind of, he was there, you know, like in the script. So it's like, for me as the actor, it was a matter of taking the pieces that were there and just kind of finding my own way of how I wanted to put them together to create him. And then once being on set, you know, fine tuning all of that with Rafa. And for me, it's like James was my very first lead in a feature. So I took this opportunity as like, I'm going to treat it like my one shot and I'm going to go all in on it. And I could not have asked for like a better character than James Taylor because of the depths to him, because in, you know, everything that he's, it's really interesting. Even for me, when I watched the movie again, to kind of try to separate myself from being the actor who portrayed him and just kind of trying to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, it was really important to me that every moment was genuine. You know, every reaction he has is authentic and grounded, because a lot of it is set, like he said, with the ghost of his wife, you know, kind of in this supernatural realm. And a lot of the movie is, it's James alone. So it was like, it was me and it was like trusting Rafa, his direction. It was the whole crew was like, they were so amazing. The camera department and the gaffers and, you know, everybody, they like the way they lit these scenes were like, oh my God, you know? So it's like, I just kind of had to like, do my part, like mentally, you know, like mentally get there, mentally get there, because I knew that they were taking care of everything else, you know. And the film looks beautiful, you know, like the whole thing is really, I'm so proud of the work that everybody did to it. And for me, it was just a matter of like, okay, you know, like this guy needs to be real and let's make him real. So it's like mentally, let's go to those places He had mentioned he watches via webcam. So that scene, of course, was nothing. You know, I was just looking at a blank computer.
Right.
He had like the guy who takes her hostage had a few lines, you know, that was somebody reading off screen to me. So it's like, I kind of had that to play off of. Sure. But for the most part, you know, it's like, you have to use your imagination to really sell those scenes. And yeah, it was such a challenge too. And that kind of made me nervous, but also excited me. You know, I was like, man, this isn't an easy character. Like, especially for the first time where it's like, to be the lead, it's like, you know, that this story in particular, I believe James was like 120 out of like 128 scenes. So it's like, he really is like who you're watching.
Yeah. And yeah.
You start to think about like, as the audience, you know, like, man, if I don't like this guy, like, I'm not going to like the movie. So, you know, you kind of put that pressure on yourself a little bit, but it also worked in a way where it kind of fueled me, you know? And I was like, all right, let's show him what I got, you know, and let's bring it. And yeah, that's certainly what I tried to do.
Wow, man. Yeah. Now, and hearing you talk about it too, man, you can hear how excited and passionate you were about doing it and still are. So
yeah,
that's really cool, dude. It's really neat hearing both your stories. Like, you didn't know each other. You went to the same school, but this script that I wrote for you really sounds like it was meant for you, but he sat on it for 5 years because you were too young. It's all just cool hearing everything unfold. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's neat hearing creative people get together. And then when you know, and you're on the right path again, all this stuff kind of unfolds, right?
Oh yeah. 100%.
So Raphael, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Like the film, like the storyline, the production, direction, you know, directing it. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think just like Andrew, I couldn't have picked a better project, to be honest, to do my debut as a director. I mean, just like he said, you know, the crew was amazing. I got very lucky that the reason why I was able to make, you know, this film completely independent, because I financed it myself, was because everybody, and I do mean everybody that was involved, just believed so much in the film, you know, that they're willing to risk a lot for it. The way that I was able to make the film actually was I could basically afford, you know, to bring Dan Andrew from the States, like pay for room and board, et cetera, pay the food for the crew, transportation, things like that, you know, the art department, yeah, production budgets, whatever. But I couldn't really pay them salaries. So I went to all of them and I was like, hey, I got this script. I really want to make this film, but I want to make it good. I want to make it right. And so I offered them percentages on the film. So, you know, everybody that came, including Andrew, including our other co-star actor, yeah, Tom, our lead actress, Kelsey, like, they all just came down here because they believed in the film. So to me, that was like an insanely amazing experience, you know, to have 30 people on a set, just book a month of work, you know, for no pay, just because they want, you know, to be a part of that script. That was like, yeah, it's an indescribable experience, honestly.
I was just going to say, like, it's kind of says a lot, like, just, you know, just that scenario, it says more than words. So that's pretty awesome. So again, I appreciate you guys coming on. Is there any other final words, Andrew, or again, Raphael, for the audience? Where can they go other than the, you know, Tornado Music and Film Festival? Where can they go other to check it out?
Well, we're actually closing down a deal with a distribution company in the U.S. Nice. For the U.S. and Canada. So we should be up on Amazon pretty soon.
There you go. Awesome.
Probably within the next couple months.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. So guys, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time. Andrew, anything else on your end?
No, I mean, thank you for inviting us and, you know, having us talk and share our story. That was super fun. You know, Ruff and I, we put our all into this project and, you know, we love to be able to promote it and also to just share our experiences. And I hope that somebody hears this and maybe gets inspired too. So thank you for giving us that opportunity.
My pleasure. And everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And don't forget to embrace your storm. See ya.
Tornado with Jonathan Nadeau. If you haven't yet, please subscribe now so you're first to hear new episodes with more stories of inspiration about the highs and lows of life. and how embracing the storm is so much more fulfilling of a life than being crushed by the weight of the world. And until then, we hope you're inspired to do something, whether it's creating, participating, or learning, whatever leads you to your personal passion.